Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is hour two on a Thursday. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. You know, it's funny. When I used to work at another company, they dribbled up. I don't know what happened to them. But when I used to work for the other company, probably the first time you ever heard of me, Joy Taylor's joining me. This show's called The Herd. I'm The Herd Guy. And so this company, it's 15 years ago almost today, 15, 16 years ago, I got hired by another big company, right? And when I came in, I was a West Coast guy.
Right.
So ESPN had a bunch of East Coast guys. Everybody was from the East. And I remember when I first worked there, I said, I got nothing against Pittsburgh, but it's basically northern West Virginia. Why doesn't anybody ever talk about, like, Los Angeles and San Francisco and Seattle?
Oh, how dare you. Northern.
And everybody was like, whoa. So I started doing radio on ESPN, and I hit in Los Angeles. And I remember people used to come up to me all over the country in airports, everywhere I was at. This was for like 10 years. And they used to thank me. This was like a thing. They'd be like, hey, I just appreciate you acknowledging the West Coast exists. Because before you, it was Mike and Mike and all these shows. And they were just like East. Literally, there was nothing west of the Mississippi, maybe Chicago. And so so when I do a 10-minute segment on L.A., it's like, yeah, that's what I do. That's my jam. That's what I roll. Like, we matter out here. Like, these stars, all athletes have homes out here. Even if they don't play, they have homes out here.
Well, I guess
I'm not going to spend all day talking about Indianapolis.
I mean, so I grew up in Pittsburgh, which is, what did you call it? Northern West Virginia?
Yeah.
It is not. Pittsburgh's the East Coast. Don't at me either. It is.
They put French fries on their hamburgers.
We put French fries on our salads.
Okay, so it's not really the East Coast.
But I will say, though, if you've grown up somewhere like that and you've lived your life there, California and Los Angeles feels, it's like it might as well be
Australia.
Another country. Yes, it's so far away. It's just not. It just is. Like New York, Philly,
well, here's what,
Miami, this feels like, you know,
here's the other thing.
It's in the same time zone.
All my friends out west have been to New York because for business.
Right.
When I moved to ESPN, people, like 45-year-old men, had never been to Seattle, Denver. Like Ryan Russillo is a buddy of mine. He always jokes about that. He's from Boston. And he's like, he and Bill Simmons are from Boston. They both live in L.A. right around where I live. Russillo's like a neighbor. And he always jokes, Russillo, to his credit, always says, all these Boston guys are like, why would you ever leave? And he's like, you never have. You don't know what it's like. It's called no winter.
It's a whole
They have
thing.
No. They think like Martha's Vineyard is going to Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to LA twice before I moved here, and it was only because Jason was on Dancing with the Stars, so
yeah.
Like had the privilege of coming out and seeing him,
yeah.
In the show, and like didn't even really go around LA like that. Like the furthest west I'd ever been is Kansas when he was playing them in college.
Right.
I get a new concept of the West Coast.
I never feel I have to apologize for Los Angeles.
No, there's lots of people that live here. Like
10
millions
million
and
people
and
in our county.
Just yes. California's a big place.
Yeah. Let's go to Greg Cosell, NFL Meat Sandwich, NFL Films, 41 years there. If you bet it, if you do fantasy, if you love football, he's my favorite. He is now joining us live. By the way, just thinking something off the top of my head. Years ago, you and I were at San Diego.
Yeah.
You remember the Steve Clark's camp?
Without question. I remember well.
And I asked you, and to your credit, I said, Greg, I'm going to lean on you. I watched Mitch Trubisky. I do not understand it. And you said to me, he's a front leg thrower. This is probably not going to be great. You were way early on that. Everybody was falling in love with him. And you said, Colin, I've looked at tape. Front leg thrower, the ball's going to die. And you, nobody, I always refer to that if I talk to scouts. I'm like, Cosell told me. So to your credit. Now, I want to talk about another quarterback who I think is more talented, but he is struggling. It is Lamar Jackson. And yes. I've said, can he break through whatever this is? People get film, they throw stuff at you. What if you're Baltimore, what would concern you about Lamar?
Well, I think where you have to get to with Lamar, and I've always believed this. I believe, and Bill Walsh was the one who taught me this, really, Colin. You have to get to a point where your pass game and your run game can work independently of one another. And what happens in the NFL, because there's really smart coaches, is they figure out how to better defend the multidimensional run game of the Ravens. As good as Greg Roman is, and he may be as good as there is in designing run game concepts, but defensive coordinators figure it out. So now you have to be able to throw the football, and you have to be able to throw the football independent of all those run game concepts in any given game. So now you get to a drop back passing game in which you have to be able to understand your concepts in complete detail and understand defensive concepts in complete detail. That's how quarterbacks are able to eliminate what's not there quickly and isolate what is there quickly within the structure of the offense and a comfort level in the pocket. He is not at that point. So what happens is, because he's always been able to rely on his legs, is he now moves prematurely. He leaves the pocket prematurely at times. And yes, he'll make some special runs because he's that special, but he will also leave a lot of throws on the field that are there.
Kansas City can win multiple ways. They can win finesse. They can win power. That is generally rare. Generally, there's ways teams can win. And the Browns Titans play this week. And they do feel like there's a certain formula for them to win. The running game's excelling. And I think Tennessee is a better version of Cleveland. What does the film say?
Well, you're hit it right on the head. They're mirror images of each other philosophically. But I think you're right that overall the Titans' pass game is better than Cleveland, more consistent. But both those teams still have to figure out just what I said about the Ravens, how they can throw the football if the run game is not the driving force. I think that Tannehill has shown over the last number of weeks he's done a much better job off the run game of getting to, let's say, his second read, which becomes critical because teams understand where do you want to go with the football off your play-action pass game, and often they'll take it away. So they'll take away, for instance, A.J. Brown on a lot of those in-breakers at times. Then you've got to go somewhere else. And Tannehill's done a better job of that in recent weeks. For instance, hitting Corey Davis, who's become a little more of a volume target in the past two, three games, but not as the number one primary on those plays. So they've done a better job of that. Right now, Baker Mayfield is still struggling. He's very inconsistent. You can see he plays very fast. There's a frenetic movement to him. But then he'll also make two or three throws a game that remind us all why he was the number one pick when he came out of Oklahoma. And so he's still trying to figure out how to be more composed, more comfortable in the pocket, and play just with a little more poise.
There are things that are correctable, and there are things as a quarterback that are not. Jared Goff is in a really bad stretch of turnovers, fumbles, and interceptions. And I've always felt with Goff that when he's comfortable, he's very good. When he's uncomfortable, he's a liability. Are his flaws, Jared Goff, are they correctable?
I would say in answer to that, that Jared Goff is kind of what he is, and I think we all know what he is. I think he's a programmed quarterback who is very system-based. And again, most quarterbacks are. That is not a pejorative negative statement. But he is really like that. So when the system works, and McVay has a phenomenal system, and he can drop back and be comfortable in the pocket, and he gets what he expects coverage-wise, which comes from coaching and play calling, then he looks really good because he throws the ball really well. When he doesn't get that for whatever reason, it could be coverage-based. The Niners did some great things in coverage this week. And Jimmy Ward, by the way, is a really overlooked player in the Niners' defense. But they did some really good things in coverage. When he gets pressure where he's not comfortable in the pocket, then his efficiency drops. He's not going to become a different player, Colin. This is who he is. So he becomes very much a function of the scheme.
I want to talk about Aaron Rodgers because I don't really care about awards. I'd give him my MVP. And I don't think he's as good as Mahomes, but I think he's more valuable to his team. So Matt LaFleur comes in, And I thought Matt LaFleur was very good in the first half last year, but young coaches often aren't great after intermission. That's where the Belichicks and Pete Carrolls are. This year, I think Green Bay has done a better job, although they've had some clunkers in the second half, of, you know, making adjustments at half. But I will say this. This year, this is the second year with Matt LaFleur. Last year, you could argue, well, he's no better than he was with Mike McCarthy, so it wasn't about Matt LaFleur. This year, Aaron looks much more comfortable to me.
Yeah.
What are you seeing with him and LaFleur? That's just what it looks like for me. The body language mostly better. Why is he so comfortable?
And you're 100% right, Colin. And think of this. What are we not seeing as much this year with Rodgers that we've become used to seeing? Him running around and leaving the pocket. We're seeing way less of that. This offense now, this pass game, is a very desirable combination of being highly schemed, where they win with the route concepts, but also Rodgers being very aggressive when he sees one-on-ones. Because when he sees one-on-ones, whether it's on the outside or whether it's, let's say, in the slot, if it's man coverage, he's going to throw that ball. But yet, they're also very schemed, and you see a lot of plays where the design, the concept wins. The touchdown we're seeing right here to Robert Tonyan is a great example of that. So this is now a really good mix. I know people like to say, for whatever it means, that, oh, Rodgers has bought in. I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know what's in Aaron Rodgers' head. I can only tell you that the film shows that this offense is really well schemed, but yet Rodgers will be willing to turn it loose anytime he sees those one-on-ones.
So now I want to go to Brady on this, because I said this week, we looked at his numbers, 28 TDs, 11 picks, 94 passer rating, 65 data, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, considering Evans was hurt early, so was Chris Godwin, O.J. Howard leaves, Fournette came right before the season, new coach, new system. I'm like, maybe we're being ridiculous here. He leads the NFL, I believe, in completions. Only a few of the stars have more yards. And I'm like, are we overanalyzing this? Is Brady actually having a pretty darn good year? Like, what does the film say?
Well, it's a different offense. He's very used to an offense that's very rhythmic based in terms of quick game type throws. Three-step drops, bang play action, five-step drops, ball comes out. This is a little bit of a different offense in terms of the vertical element to it. And by vertical, I don't mean throwing the ball 40, 50 yards down the field. So what that means, Colin, is it means you're in the pocket for just a bit longer. Think of it this way, and the audience will be able to appreciate this. Three-step timing is 1.5 seconds, the ball's out. Five-step timing is 2.1 seconds. Seven-step timing is 2.6 seconds. So when you start getting into more of the five-step and the seven-step timing, you're just in the pocket longer, and that changes the timing, and it changes your mental clock. So there's more of those deeper kinds of throws in this offense. And the offensive line has been a little bit of an up-and-down struggle this year, and he's been under a little more duress because the ball doesn't necessarily come out as quick within the structure of this style of offense. So while he's not had a bad year, there's been more what we would call negative plays that we're not used to seeing when he was in New England.
I want to talk about the Steelers. Obviously, in the NFL, Seattle and the New York Giants, I think, are better today than Week 2. I think the Bears and the Niners and the Steelers are worse than Week 2 or 3. Teams ebb and flow, right? Some of it with Pittsburgh is now Bud Dupree's now out for the year. Devin Bush is out. Two really, really high-end linebackers out. And I watched them last night. But I want to talk about the running game specifically. You would have never wanted Big Ben at this point in his career to throw 51 times against RG3 in a MASH unit in Baltimore.
They didn't have to do that. That was by choice.
So let me ask you. Is their run game... Why can't the Steelers? They have very good offensive line. You can't crowd the box because Ben will beat you deep. They have good receivers.
Right.
What is up with their running game? What is it?
Well, by choice, they're having Ben drop back an awful lot, Colin. You know, earlier in the season, there was a 3 or 4 week stretch where James Conner, and I know he's on the COVID list and hopefully he gets back okay, but there was a 3 or 4 week stretch where James Conner was very effective. He was averaging 17, 18 carries a game. Their run game looked pretty solid. Then he had a couple of games where it wasn't that good. And then it seems like they've totally abandoned it. I mean, look, what's sustainable and what's not sustainable is always open to debate with smart, reasonable people. I just, to me, you don't want Ben Roethlisberger dropping back by choice 45, 50 times in a game.
Yes.
Now, a lot of their pass game is very quick game now and short. They do take their shots, but they try to get the ball out of Ben's hands pretty quickly. But I think they're going to need some kind of run game. I don't want to throw out the word balance because that's a cliche and it can mean many different things to many different teams. But I just don't think 50 dropbacks by choice is something you want to do every week.
Finally, our big play. Let's just talk Mahomes.
He's good.
Every great quarterback has a unique quality to them. Mahomes has something that I don't think I've ever seen. The back pedal, where he'll take a long, and he'll just keep, because he has so much confidence in his arm, he just keeps back pedaling. He just waits for the receiver to break. It's special to watch, and you saw it. I do wonder if Kansas City sometimes, because they score so brilliantly and quickly, if they're not urgent enough at times with their series. I guess it's a Golden State Warrior problem. When you can score so fast, you know, right, you can score so fast, you don't always play with urgency. But let's talk a little about Mahomes.
Well, he's pretty good. I mean, you know, we spoke about Rodgers earlier. I mean, I think you can easily make the case that Rodgers and Mahomes are the two best throwers in the game. And Mahomes is truly, truly special. And he's just one of those guys. There's really not a whole lot more to say about him. And, of course, he's getting better mentally the more he plays. And I think he's one of those guys that really understands how important that part of the game is. And certainly Andy Reid does. But he is just absolutely special as a thrower. And we're seeing him here throw. This was the first touchdown to Tyreek Hill. The play I want to show was actually the second touchdown to Tyreek Hill. And we can end up, and this is it right now. So let's actually take a look at this and we can break it down. So this was the second touchdown that we're talking about to Tyreek Hill. And this was something they do very, very often and they do very, very well. And what they do here is they line up in what we call a 1-by-3 set. And we call it a 1-by-3, not a 3-by-1, because it's the tight end who's the single receiver to the boundary side of the field opposite the trips. And here what the Bucs show, they show a 2-deep coverage, 2-man coverage, 2-deep safeties and man-to-man across the board. But they will rotate to cover one, a single high man coverage with that safety taking the back. What's the matchup here? It's Tyreek Hill, Carlton Davis, and they love when Hill is in the inside slot to trips to run this deep over route. They'll run it against man. They'll run it against zone. It's a staple of theirs, and he just runs away from Carlton Davis. It's really not terrible coverage, but it's just very difficult to cover. In man coverage, he's running away from the deep safety, so the deep safety provides no help. So it's just a speed issue, and obviously Mahomes just put it right on him. But they're a very, very difficult defense, very difficult offense to defend.
Yeah. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, over 4 decades. Great seeing you again, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet. Look at that. We got new information on LeBron this morning. New information. We may have to get back to that LeBron-MJ debate. New information coming in. Wow.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
In 2 days, it's the fight event of the fall as undefeated Errol Spence Jr. takes on Danny Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship. Available on pay-per-view or buy the fight on foxsports.com/PPV and watch on any screen you want.
Boxing is one of the last things that gets me to pay-per-view. It's one of the last. I shouldn't say that. UFC does too. UFC and boxing, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I just don't do pay-per-view on, but there's just something about your, and it's always one of these things, like, I know the fight exists, I don't buy it in advance, and I'm just sitting there, and there's some psychology, this is why, by the way, they always, like the Tyson fight, they keep pushing it off, because everybody's like me, you like, it's $50, and it's like, and I always rationalize it like, this is a business expense, I gotta watch this anyway, I may not talk about it a ton on the air, but I'm gonna talk about it a little, so, and I like watching fights. But it's like one of the last things, like, I'll just drop $75 and be like, hey, call a buddy over. And it's like, I got the beers. Bring over some chips. Let's watch a fight.
Well, I always say this, like boxing and UFC, you always say it's an event, but it's like you're watching history, right? Because no matter what, this is not going to happen again.
Right.
Like if you miss a NFL game on Sunday because you're watching another NFL game.
Right.
That team is going to play next week. And maybe even if it's the last game of the season, most of that team will be back next year.
Right.
So like you may see it again.
Right.
That's why the playoffs are so big. That's why March Madness is so big. Like you're only going to see this collection, like this group of people one time do this thing. If you're watching a boxing event, like this guy might retire and you never fight again. Like you have to be a part of that night.
Yeah. It's I'll watch it. I guarantee you that. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Don't you just love Wednesday afternoon NFL games?
I thought it was. I just sat there and I was like, it was just. I just grabbed my computer. I literally had chips. That's my weakness. And I sat there with guacamole and chips and I with a Diet Coke and sat and watched the game for 2 hours.
It's really. Look, it was not ideal for anyone involved, but right. You know, to having sports on at all of these random times. After not having sports for 5 months, I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. I'll take a Wednesday afternoon game. Why not? So the Steelers remain undefeated. They beat the Ravens 19-14 yesterday. Not a very artistic win.
How many passes did they drop? They didn't do anything well.
It was something. And Mike Tomlin was not pleased.
I'm really disappointed in our performance tonight. We did enough to win, but that's all. It was really junior varsity, to be quite honest with you. And it was in all three phases. We couldn't run the ball effectively when we needed to. We dropped too many significant passes, very catchable, makeable passes. We didn't make significant plays in the special teams game. Our kickoff coverage unit wasn't good enough. We turned the damn ball over. We gave up big plays in critical moments on defense. Can't have it. They converted a long run on a possession down before the half. Unacceptable. They had a 70-yard touchdown late in the game. Unacceptable.
I feel like when Mike Tomlin is upset, he's upset at me. Like when you're listening to him, like, you would not interrupt that man. If he is scolding you, you're going to sit there and listen to every word he says. And when he is finished, if he has given you an opening to respond, you will. And that's only if he's asked you a question. Otherwise, you're going to sit there and listen.
I've always appreciated Tomlin's ability not to sugarcoat stuff. He's a man's man. He's not trying to sell me something. Like Mike will say, we're great. We're not afraid. I mean, he's always asked these questions. This is why he's going to be a great television broadcaster. He ducks nothing. There is no salesmanship. He is telling you he is as honest. He should be a politician because he would just tell you, wear a damn mask. And you'd be like, well, Mike said to wear a mask. I'm going to wear a mask. There's no fluff to him. There's no agenda with Mike other than be good. And if you're not, I'll call it out.
And this is what you want to hear after. I mean, just the start of that game was a disaster.
Steeler fans have been whining all year. You're like the seventh best team in the league this morning.
Well, look,
I'm done.
They are undefeated. And if you're a fan, you're going to hang your hat on that. But
what's the value of that this morning?
Well, if you're a fan, but if you're Mike Tomlin, you got to keep it real. That was not the performance that you should have had against that Ravens team. They had no one.
It's embarrassing.
Like this is
we talk about good losses. That was a bad win.
It's a bad loss. A bad win. Yes, and that's what he said. Like they did enough to win, so there's that. But there's no reason the Steelers, and I don't think that they do. I don't think the team themselves walk away from that game feeling good about that performance. Also, they lost Bud Dupree. Tore his ACL, so he is out for the season.
Bad news, because he was having a good year.
Yes, Alex Highsmith will replace him, who is a third-round draft pick rookie. Bud Dupree had 31 tackles, 8 sacks, 15 quarterback hits, and 2 forced fumbles. Obviously, they lost Devin Bush earlier in the year, tearing his ACL. So another really big loss. Not good for the Steelers overall. I mean, look, I still think the Steelers are a great team,
they're
going to
get
coached.
A number one seed, probably.
Yes, and that's what you want because there's only one bye this
lose
year.
Lose to Tennessee.
No, I don't think lose to Tennessee. But it's like, look, that's a significant injury. That's not what you want, and that was not the performance that you wanted against the Ravens, who had obviously we all know what the situation with the Ravens is. So Texans receiver Will Fuller's season's over due to a PED suspension. He's also in the final year of his rookie deal, and Deshaun Watson is making it clear he wants Fuller to stay in Houston.
You know, Will's my brother. The whole organization knows that, too. And, you know, make sure that we get him back for next year, especially in this organization. But, yeah, I mean, that's very important. So definitely one guy that I'm going to be working on this last month and off season for sure.
They got to watch out because they have Tunzel's Law expensive and Deshaun and J.J. Watt. And you pay their, you know, they become the Cowboys, which is you're really thin and poor at certain spots, but you got 5 stars. Like I would struggle to pay Will Fuller. He's been hurt too much. And then this would tick me off. Knowing you have a contract year, this would, if I'm a GM, not a fan.
But I mean, if Deshaun,
I know, but
has a, like, it's what? How much else are you going to take away from Deshaun?
I know, but I'm like a general manager.
Remember, he was talked about being traded, and after the deadline, Watson said it would have been hell if the team had traded him.
I know, but I can't pay Will Fuller. I can't. If you're not responsible enough with this, and you've had injuries, I can't pay him. Now, the left tackle. I told you a month ago, I think J.J. Watt, who, by the way, he wants to play in a winter. I don't know why they don't deal J.J. Watt. You can't tell me there's not. It's too late now. They'll have to do it next year. But I would take J.J. Watt's salary for a year.
I think with everything that happens this season with the Texans, they were just like, let's keep what we have in place and make these kind of moves when we have our new head coach and our new GM and, you know, we're into our next season. But I'm with you. I don't think that J.J. Watt finishes his career in Houston.
No, both people win. He wins and the Texans get salary cap relief.
Yeah. So all three of the Ball brothers are now in the NBA.
I saw this. Now, so who signed with Detroit?
LiAngelo Ball
now, where was he at?
Agreed to a non-guaranteed one-year deal with the Pistons. Remember, he played in Lithuania after he left UCLA. He went undrafted in the 2018 NBA draft. He played in LaVar's JBA League. And then he signed with the G League in Oklahoma City.
How did he do there?
He didn't play a game before the season was canceled due to the pandemic. So he was a practice player in December of 2019.
You're into this stuff. What's his rep? Like, you like that ballslife.com.
I do like ballslife.com.
You're really into that. So tell me, what's his game?
The underground NBA hoops
nerd
scene. I am. He shoots a lot. He's a good shooter. He's a little physical. He's not as quick as his brothers.
Oh,
he's still very big.
He's got a better looking jumper.
There's a lot of people that actually feel like he should be playing tight end rather than pursuing a basketball career. But he wants to play basketball, and obviously is, you know, was good enough to be on a G League team, and now is a non-guaranteed one-year deal with the Pistons. So he's going to try and make the team in camp is what's happening.
He's not super quick in this video, but
have the speed of his brothers. No, yeah, he's a good shooter, and he's not as quick.
He's a big,
bigger physical player. But the bigger story, obviously, is LaVar. If you're listening, I would really appreciate it if you'd speak some manifestations over my life, because whatever this man says comes to pass when it comes to his sons. Like, he said that he was going to do this. And this is an incredible story. Like, all three of his sons are currently in the NBA. He said it was going to happen.
Okay.
Nobody believed it.
I used to get hate mail because I would defend LaVar Ball. And I said, he got three kids offered to UCLA. I hope my kids can get into a trucking school. And so I'm like, I'm not going to bag on any dad who gets three boys offered to one of the best universities. You know, UCLA has more people apply to UCLA than any. It has a huge international connection. So I used to get hate mail. Like, how do you defend this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, A, he's entertaining. B, he brags a lot. But that's sports. So is Conor McGregor. People brag. And bottom line is, his sons, I was watching all this Chino Hills stuff on the internet. They were, like, crushing people. I'm like, they can play.
He's an AAU dad.
He's an AAU dad.
And if you spend any time around AAU sports, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he's over the top, and he says things that nobody agrees with.
That's fine.
But at the end of the day, everything you just said is true. And look, like, most people who haven't had a father in their life would love to have someone like LaVar Ball in their life campaigning for them. Now, no family is perfect, but he's great television. Can't deny that. And what he said was going to happen happens, no matter what you say. Like, nobody's going to risk their job to make LaVar Ball happy. Like, clearly, they feel like his sons are talented enough to be in the NBA, and they're all there.
Every time I ask him to come on the show, he comes on. Like, yeah. I think he gets me. I like him. I mean, I think he's goofy, but who cares? I'm goofy. I mean, the bottom line is, loves his family. The boys love LaVar. They're loyal to
Yes, and shout out to Tina, because she's been through a lot, and she clearly holds the whole family together as well. So she deserves a lot of credit as well.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting, because Anthony Davis signed yesterday with the Lakers. So he's not. Now, his contract and LeBron's contract the day before, in a 24-hour period, they both signed. That means Giannis is not going to come play here. That's better for the league. Let Giannis stay in Milwaukee, which I think he'll probably do. Maybe Miami, but stay in Milwaukee. But it's interesting. When LeBron first came to L.A., they had a bunch of young kids. They weren't very good. So our whole takeaway was, mine was, I was like, can they win one? That'd be unbelievable. You win a couple in Miami, you go to Cleveland, and you win in Los Angeles. But now we've got new information. Number one, LeBron and AD's chemistry is like the closest stars. I'm trying to even put any two together. I don't know if there's ever been two stars that like each other this much. Magic and Kareem got along. They were very different people, but they got along. But okay, so that's number one. Number two is they've already got a title. Number three is they had the best offseason in the league. That's indisputable. And number four is, oh, Golden State's not in the way. And you start looking at all these Western contenders. So let's take Oklahoma City. They lost Chris Paul. Let's take the Denver Nuggets. They lost Jeremy Grant. The Clippers lost Landry Shamet and Montrezl Harrell and their head coach. The Rockets, although not a huge threat, lost Westbrook, their coach, and their GM. Portland and Utah are good, but they don't match up with – they don't have anybody to guard LeBron. So Utah just does not match up athletically with the Lakers at all. They just don't. They don't have a wing defender, and they still don't, and they know it. And Portland, I think they got Robert Covington, so he's a long, rangy player. But they're kind of too backcourt dependent, frankly. So we got new information. This feels like, to me, this L.A. thing, this Laker thing is not going away. And you start putting up those – remember, when Tom Brady – Joe Montana was 4-for-4. He was the GOAT. The minute Brady won a fifth, we didn't care about his Super Bowl losses. Like, he beat Atlanta. We didn't even argue about it. The next day, it was like, okay, Tom's the GOAT. Joe's runner-up, even though he wasn't perfect. You start looking at this. Michael's 6-for-6. It's always been 6-for-6. If LeBron gets to 6 or 7, much like Brady Montana, we're not going to care about the losses. We're just going to go, LeBron won more. Perfection matters until somebody trumps it with more titles and more volume. I mean, Magic was in 9 finals and won 5. If Magic has got 7 of 9, we're not talking about Michael all the time. So you start looking at the way this thing is going up and down and what they're adding in L.A., we got new information. This is a force to be reckoned with. Chris Broussard around the corner of the Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get right to Chris Broussard. Don't want to waste any time. The former New York Times sports writer, Fox Sports NBA analyst, now joining me live. Don't want to waste any time. Westbrook, John Wall trade. There was a draft pick. I don't care. It's the NBA draft. It's all about prospects anyway. I loved Westbrook. Over Wall is a trade piece. I mean, I think Westbrook's a much better player. Do you?
Yeah, so especially at this point. I mean, he was better than John Wall anyway, but John Wall hasn't played a game in almost 2 years. He hasn't played a full season in about 3 years. So we have no idea what he's going to come back with. The only guy you can point to who came back from an Achilles injury and was the same is Dominique Wilkins. Now, that's a good sign for Wall because Wilkins was athletic, explosive, as is Wall. But it's no guarantee he's going to be the same player. But even if he is, I think Washington won this trade because Westbrook makes them relevant.
Yeah.
Right? They haven't been relevant for a few years, out of the playoffs. Now you're must-see TV. Everybody wants to see what Westbrook and Bradley Beal can do.
Right.
They'll put shooters around him. They got Davis Bertrands, and they'll play off Westbrook and see what they can do. Look, I give them a shot to make the playoffs in the East, and this is what Westbrook has that Wall doesn't, even though both of them were explosive athletes. Westbrook plays with an aggressiveness and a ferocity that is so unique and so dynamic that it's an X factor for your team and for the opponent. It keeps the opponent off guard, off balance, because this dude is so unique and dynamic. And it's kind of like a boxer with a knockout punch.
Yeah, no.
He might not be technically sound,
right.
You know, can't do it. Deontay Wilder can't do much else, but he can always catch you. That threat is there, right? That's Westbrook. So at least you got that. I mean, you're not winning a championship in Washington, but you're relevant, you're sexy. You're a lot more fun than you were 2 days ago.
So LeBron and Anthony Davis are locked in now for a couple of years. A lot of stars in this league do not get along. Why do those two get along so well?
Well, one, LeBron is just, he's great at things like that. I mean, obviously he had his issues with Kyrie, but a lot of that was just Kyrie was the young gun and didn't want to hear from the older guy. But a lot of this, Colin, is where they're at in their career, okay? LeBron has done so much individually, winning championships. He's not threatened by AD whatsoever. So he's ready to mentor him. He doesn't mind if AD gets some shine or even the shine. At this point in his career, he's ready to mentor him. And when you bring two young guns together and they're both still climbing, that's when you often have problems. Shaq and Penny, they could have been one of the greatest duos ever. But they were both young guns and they were worried about who was getting the credit. In Philadelphia, the people will tell you, that's the problem with Embiid and Simmons. Is that they're fighting for credit. Who's the man? Who's the star on the team? Shaq and Kobe obviously had success, but they were still both so close in age, both in their prime and young and climbing, that they butted heads about that. Kareem and Magic didn't know, because Kareem had won a championship. He had his 5-6 MVPs. Magic's rookie year was his 6th. And he had been a while without winning, so he didn't mind a young gun coming in and helping him. And Magic wasn't threatened by Kareem. It was more like a big brother, little brother relationship. And that's what this is. This is big brother, little brother versus two little brothers who are fighting for daddy's attention. Right. So I think that's a big part of why they do get along so well. And there's no threat there from each other.
You know, yesterday The Athletic broke a piece that was pretty remarkable on Kawhi, Paul George, the star treatment. And, you know, the NBA's got one king. It's King James. But there's a lot of guys that want the treatment like Paul George, and they don't have anything to show for it. Were you surprised by the animosity apparently behind closed doors with this Clippers team?
Well, I wasn't surprised just because I had been hearing it, you know, for the past few months that there were issues there, that it was really, you know, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, and Pat Beverly were bothered by the culture change where, you know, before those two, the two stars got there, they were the little engine that could. They had a culture, work your tail off, you know, and those three got a lot of shine, even though they weren't really stars. And then you bring Kawhi and Paul George in and everything changed culturally. And that was a problem. I was told, too, that, yeah, obviously some things Kawhi did rub guys the wrong way, not really practicing, not really being connected to the team, flying in and being late for flights coming from San Diego. Obviously, that rubs you the wrong way. But for the most part, guys, what I was told, were not as bothered by Kawhi because he delivered. If you're going to get star treatment, they all understand. They've been in the league long enough to know. There's star treatment for guys. But when you deliver, guys can live with it. Paul George wasn't delivering. When he's giving you 10 points in a playoff game, guys are going to be bothered by why are you getting this star treatment. I said this a few months ago. There were people on that roster that thought they were as good or better than Paul George. And I'm not talking about Kawhi. So they were the ones looking at it like, how is this dude getting all this special treatment? And I think I'm better than him, or at least as good as him. Why am I getting that? So that was the problem. But I tell you what, Colin, I think that they're going to be better for it this year. I think they'll be humbled. I think they'll be motivated. Obviously, they got Montrezl Harrell out. They think that's addition by subtraction. Serge Ibaka is a great chemistry guy, locker room guy. He's close with Kawhi. He can bring out the fun guy in Kawhi. So I think the Clippers will be better. People are writing them off at their own peril. Lakers should be the favorite, no question about it. But don't write off the Clippers just yet.
Chris Broussard, Odd Couple with Rob Parker. Always looks so well-appointed. So look at him. He's just very classy. You bring some dignity and class to our show, and it's certainly, from where I sit, certainly needed. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, man. Love the show.
All right. It's the streaming service everybody you should like if you're into a bunch of stuff. Discovery. Discovery Plus, all the shows, Food Network, Discovery Channel, HGTV, plus exclusive originals you won't see anywhere else. It's coming in 2021, Discovery app. Yeah, here's some of the things, the Athletic article. Joy shared this with you yesterday. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were the only players to have their own personal security guards and trainers. Now, I will say for pro athletes, sometimes they have their own trainers. That's not, if you have the money, a lot of guys, Russell Wilson's probably got his own trainer, Tom Brady. Leonard and Paul George had the power over teams' practices and travel schedule. James Harden has that in Houston. I don't love it, but it's what they had. Kawhi was allowed to live in San Diego and commute from there, which often made him late for team flights. That I don't like at all. Guys don't want to sit in a don't make anybody sit in a tarmac. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George typically didn't speak to the media until at least 45 minutes after games concluded under the guise of post-game treatment workouts. Don't love that either. So I'll give you a trainer. A lot of guys have trainers. Your body is your, you know, it's your commerce. And I don't have a problem. I don't love it, but I do get asking Kawhi and Paul George, what's the best time to practice tomorrow? I kind of get that. I don't like you telling us when the plane leaves. I don't like you being late to the plane. And just talk to the media. LeBron James literally walks off the floor every game and goes right to the media. He could be in Memphis. If the king can talk to the media, don't give me this talk to the hand stuff. Nonsense. Just go give 45 seconds to the young guy or gal that's on the sidelines asking NBA questions. Come on. The king does it. All right. Hour 3, Greg Jennings around the corner. Live in L.A., it's The Herd.